Okay, what I'm going to, my name is Edmund Boinger, and I'm with Oklahoma State University, and I work both on campus in the Stored Product Insect Research Laboratory and also on our off-campus site, which is our Stored Products Research and Education Center, and I'll talk a little about that just in a minute. What I'm going to be sharing is, once we have all this knowledge from all the research that we've done, how do we get these results to the end user? So this is not a type of talk that I normally give because I'm 100% research. I'm not an extension person, although you can ask Jim Criswell. We work hand in hand on a lot of extension stuff, but officially I'm 100% research. But the critical issue is, how do you get, once you've generated all this data and information, how do you get that to the people that really need it? And that's what I'm going to attempt to talk about today. For those of you that are not aware, there are four research institutions in North America that deal with stored products. There are three universities, our center at OSU in Stillwater, there's the Post-Harvest Education and Research Center at Purdue University, and then there's the Grain Research Center at the University of Manitoba in Canada. Those are the only three research centers that are centered at a university situation. Now, there are other departments throughout the United States that may have a person that deals partially or limitedly with insect pests and other pests of stored products, but these three universities have dedicated centers to research these areas. Then on the national front, there's the U.S. Grain Marketing and Production Center at Manhattan, Kansas, that we all work very closely with and have a lot of cooperative projects. So there's these four institutions in the United States and Canada that are really centers for stored grain research. And as Frank told you in his talk, that there used to be more. And this is what we're left with now, other than maybe individual people at various institutions. And I will be covering various topics of what people are putting out there, and I'm not trying to ignore anyone. I'm trying to just hit highlights. So if you're here and I don't hit your institution, it's not that I don't feel you're important. I just couldn't talk about every institution. And if you really want a good summary of what is out there, if you'll go into the AM online after it's made available to all of us that are registered participants in this meeting. Rosanna Maroof yesterday gave a very good talk on a summary of those institutions that do have some aspect of stored product research in them, and you can view that presentation online. So when we generate research, you know, it may be at the Grain Center where we're doing pesticide studies when grain is going into the bin. We may be doing laboratory studies in jars. We may be doing insect studies where we have bioassays in a growth chamber. Or we may be even doing x-ray studies where we're looking at the development of insects inside kernels. So all of this research is going on, but what does that mean? What do we do with that research once we have it done? Well, I think most of you know that one of the primary outlets is research journals or refereed journal articles, but that's mainly for the scientific community. I don't know very many lay people out there, like a homeowner that has a pest problem in their pantry. They're not going to go look at the Journal of Stored Products Research to find out an answer. So these research results are generally for other scientists to look at. So we've got to really look at, how do we get that information to the end user? And there are various methods to do that with using fact sheets, handbooks, popular articles, various websites and information on websites, workshops and training sessions, and you could add a lot of other things to that list. So what I'm going to try and do is highlight some of these things that we as educators put out there, so that the information that we're generating from research can get to the people that really need to use it on the day-to-day basis. So the like any university, there's various fact sheets that we put out or current reports that touch on topics related to stored grain insect pest, and what you can do with those, and those available at various state offices and hopefully at the county extension offices in your respective states. But they're only out there if we generate them. So we have to take an extra step to take that information that we're putting in referee journal articles into a layman's term, into these fact sheets and current reports that the novice scientists can read and get some information out of. Various universities put out various extension fact sheets. Here you can see that there's some from the University of Missouri, Clemson. There's one from Kentucky on controlling product pests using temperature, storage from the University of Minnesota. So there are a lot of universities that there are individuals at them that put out information, but they may not have a whole center and a dedicated program to stored product information. There are also universities like the University of Florida that they not only have these paper documents that can be obtained by people, but they actually generate CDs such as this one, where they have a CD where they have, I think there's 70 or 80 different insect photographs on this CD that people can obtain, and therefore they can better identify what they have and know what problem they're dealing with, so that they can then go to get further information on what those pest problems are and what they're specifically dealing with. So it's not only a paper product that we're producing, but there's also the more popular CDs. Then there are workshops, and various workshops are held across the United States. This is one that Subi and his team put on dealing with heat, and it's a hands-on workshop where you actually go into their flour mill that's on campus, and they have their heaters going, and they show you how the temperature monitors are operated, where you do placement, how you circulate the air to make sure that you're getting air, the heat distributed throughout the facility. So those types of workshops are available for looking at how to best do your pest management if you want to use heat. The High Plains Elevator Workshop, they do a workshop every year in northern Texas. And you can see the circle there on the bottom, whether it's especially targeted for industry education and training. And they do that on an annual basis, and they bring in people from Kansas, Oklahoma, and Texas through the tri-chapter of JEEPS to bring all that information together so that they can get that information that we as researchers are generating to the end users, so they can take that back to their respective industries. Also, we don't all only target raw grain, but we also look at the organic products. Dirk Meyer organized this organic protection conference workshop a few years ago, and not only Purdue but Oklahoma State and Kansas State participated in that, where we had people that were specifically dealing with organics coming in and looking at how do you deal with it when you're trying to do it without the majority of your controls are not pesticides. And this picture is showing our particular setup, where we have a vacuum system where you put your products in this thick PVC type bag. On you lay your bag down on the bottom, you stack your bags in. This holds about 200 to 220 50 pound bags of feed material. You throw the top on, you zip it shut, and then you attach that vacuum system to it, and you create a low oxygen atmosphere. And so we have that there. We took that to Purdue and had that demonstrated, so we can show people that there are other alternatives if you're dealing with high price commodity or specialty commodities, where you can use alternative control methods to control your insects. Then we also, the team of us throughout the United States, put on a national stored product IPM training conference, and that happens every 3, 4, 5 years. It fluctuates a little, but we were the host of that last year, and we had about 80 participants, not only from the United States, but we actually had some from from overseas come attend, and we'll have a lot of it is hands-on. We had the first day where we did some lecturing, like this down in this corner here, but most of that workshop is where we do hands-on. So we have all these stations set up where here we're doing some of the SUBY's heat treatment, we're doing personal protective equipment, how do you do fogging and treatments in warehouses, insect identification. We have specific insect identification workshops in the evening. We look at, you know, phosphine, applying what Jim talked about, where you're putting phosphine gas directly in instead of relying on pellets and tablets. Here, Joy is talking about sulfuryl fluoride. Here again, we have the heater. So we look at all, we try to have all those different avenues available so that the people that are coming to this can have a hands-on and see how this, these different systems work, get their hands dirty, play around in the grain and look at the insects, and get a better idea of, you know, how they can not only help their own company or their own business, but also take that and give that information to their clients. Purdue University, just like Oklahoma and Kansas, I'm sure also they do various trainings, and why a lot of people come to those is because what Indiana calls continuing certifying hours. We call them CEUs, continuing education units in Oklahoma, but a lot of these people that do get trained in various aspects of pest control have to have continuation of their licenses, and they can get these continuing education credits by coming to workshops. And so Purdue's got one coming up here. In case you're from Indiana, you can still get some of those certifying units yet this year. So the universities put these on so that people can stay attuned to all the new technology and get reminded of some of the old technology and what they're supposed to be doing on a continuous basis. Then there are various other aspects out there. Here there's a homeowners column that's done at the University of Illinois, where they're talking about Indian meal moths and stored food. Like was mentioned earlier by Joel, that, you know, the urban setting has become a big part of insect control, and here's some where Texas AgriLife has put out some extension information specifically for them. Somebody mentioned the IPM programs in schools. That's a big area in certain parts of the country, so that there is some education there on the potential of how do you do that effectively. And like Shep said, you know, there's this dichotomy. They want protection, but yet they don't want to use pesticides. So how do you do that? And so there's some education that goes out there, and some of our people and people from other universities are involved in some of that education. And then there are also things like the bug news in the lower right-hand corner, which is just a blog that a retired professor puts out there with information. And as computers become more and more a part of our lives, and communication by blogging is becoming more popular, here's somebody out there that's doing it for stored products. Then there are also organizations that take technology transfer to rural areas by putting out these current topic publications so that they can get that information to the rural communities as well, so that not only those of us in the institutions of universities, but they get to distribute this not only through extension, but also through these organizations that deal directly with some of the rural aspects on rural areas in the country. You also have major companies that also are involved in putting out newsletters and doing seminars and training for education that people can come to. And so it's good to see that it's not only the universities that are trying to do some of the education, but you have companies that are very important in specifically for fumigation, as Dagesh is, but they still do training that you can go to and keep updated on throughout the year, and they have an annual training session that they do in Virginia that you can attend and get the latest information from some of their company aspects and how they are dealing with it in the day-to-day life of a company. Then you have organizations like COPASAN, and we have several people in the audience that represent that organization. And it's an alliance of various pest control companies and units throughout the United States, where they bring in all these people from all these different pest control areas and bring them together, and they have meetings several times a year, and they were at Oklahoma State last year, and they go to universities because they want to see what's on the cutting edge right now. They want to be hands-on, and it's good for us to interact with those people, but it's also good for them to interact with us, to have us have a good relationship with them, and for them, you know, they like to see, you know, 20 tables spread out with all the research publications that they can look at and take back and read, and then they filter those down through their respective companies and have this good working relationship between universities and the private industry that will take that down to the end user again, and they have newsletters and other communication that they do, and this whole network of people that work very closely together, and that also takes our research to the end user that is very effective. Then ultimately, hopefully, some of us produce an end product. Several years ago, there was a five-year area-wide program that K-State and the U.S. Marketing Lab and Oklahoma State were involved in, and where we did sampling in concrete elevators. And essentially 5 years of data was given to Paul Flynn at the U.S. Marketing Lab, and he put that all into a Stored Grain Advisor Pro program so that the user now, as a grain elevator manager, and I know it's hard to see, but they can put inputs in there such as grain moisture and the temperature and what their current populations are, and it'll predict 1 month, 2 months, and 3 months down the road what their populations are going to be. So it's a management tool that research from various institutions all went together to generate, and it all fed into this one unit, and now there's this end product that anybody can get to utilize to better manage their grain in an elevator. Bill Lindgren alluded to some of this, but this was some of the studies that we did in a flour mill where we started out with the flight track trap, that's it with the cardboard cover on at the top and then with the cardboard cover off, so you could see that the cup shape. And the bottom lower left photograph is what happened after a week in a flour mill. It's rendered ineffective. And so for a tool to be used, we could not get any worthwhile data. So that's when we went to and found a 4-inch PVC cap and glued some beads on it to make the leg, and then ultimately working with the Trace Corporation came out with an end product that is much more effective. And as you saw, for their company, that was a big boost in a product line. And that was from research that was done by one of our graduate students in our laboratory at Oklahoma State. And it's those kind of relationships that, you know, they helped us and we helped them, and it was a great working relationship to develop a product that's more effective for everybody. We also have done many sampling studies where we're looking at Indian meal moths. This trap on the right was from a feed mill where you have the lure in there, and of course that's just attracting all the male moths. And you're assuming that they're, because of roughly the one-to-one relationship, that there's that many females also out there laying eggs. And a few years ago, in Tom Phillips' laboratory, we started looking at some of that and saying, you know, how can we better improve the trapping so that we can get a better idea for what females are out there. So through a technician in our laboratory doing various extractions on various materials, came up with a female baiting system where the extract is impregnated on these wicks, and then you can now use the wick and the male attractant in this moth suppression trap and catch both males and females. So again, this was working with Insects Limited, working with a company so that we can develop a product that gives us better information when we're actually doing sampling. And to wrap this up, I'm going to go through a training session that we just conducted last month On a fumigation practical that we give a couple times a year to just to demonstrate the various aspects of how you can go about doing this to get it to the end users. And these end users are mainly elevator managers or elevator workers or managers of a pest control company that come to get certified to use fumigants. So what we will do is we'll have training sessions where we spend some time in a classroom setting explaining, you know, why you do certain things, going over the laws and regulations, and Jim Criswell does a lot of that as far as the laws and regulations. Myself and George Opel will talk a lot about the insects and trapping. We'll have some engineers there also talking about using closed loop and aeration. And then what we'll do is we'll get them out of that classroom situation and take them to the laboratory and show them some of the equipment that you need to use to better monitor, to make sure that what you're putting out there when you're doing a fumigation, you know how to monitor and what you're actually putting out there and that you're safe personally, and that, but you're also getting enough chemical out there to be killing what your target pest is. Then we'll take them outside and show them, well, how do you store your chemical? Where do you store it? How do you store it to make sure that you're safe and that you're protecting your workers and yourself? Then we'll talk about, you know, why do you need to do sealing? Our research has shown that if you don't do sealing, you're losing a lot of the gas just to the environment. So we take them out there, we show them how to seal to make sure that that they're getting, they're keeping the gas there to get the high levels of phosphine that you need. And we'll show them how to do some temporary sealing, but we'll also show them how you can do permanent sealing where you can actually do some caulking and sealing around the base that you can leave in place and don't have to do it every time. We'll actually have them do some mini demonstrations where we have these two cylinders where we have some of the participants actually seal these. So we'll put a smoke bomb in there, and on the right he's sealing it, and on the left, the clear one, we will just have them set the lid on there and we won't seal it, and then we'll walk away and go to a different area, and then we'll come back and show them that, you know, after about 5 or 10 minutes, that one that we did not seal is all clear and the one that is sealed still has the smoke in it. So we do that visually. And then we actually do that in a real bin. We have an 18,000 bushel bin that usually doesn't have grain in it because we can't afford to put grain in it. So we can smoke it. So we put a smoke bomb in there and show them, you know, visually where the leaks are. And if you can see the smoke, if you were fumigating it, that's where your gas is going. And you can see here, there's none coming out of the E's because we have gone in there and sealed all those E's with expansion foam and caulk. But you can see over here there's a mushroom vent that's open and it's coming out rather readily. But what's really interesting is it's coming out this downspout. So it's actually going up this leg all the way to the distributor up here and then down here because of the weather conditions that day. And so you're losing it all the way over here and you're not even anywhere close to fumigating over there. So it just gives them a visual of, you know, how they have to specifically think about their facility and where they all need to seal to keep that fumigant in place so that they get a 200 part per million level and can be able to hold it there for 4 days to get good control of the insects that they're trying to kill. Then we'll also talk about a closed loop situation where we take and we recirculate the gas. So we're pulling it off the top here, bringing it down here, pushing it into this cabinet where we have this fan that will circulate it, and this fan then comes back over into the transition into the bottom of this bin and recirculates the fumigant. And we've done that in a concrete elevator where we've divided the elevator into two sides where we put a closed loop system and sealed everything on the one side and left it conventionally on the other side. And this was done in an elevator that is right downtown in one of the cities in Oklahoma, and they have a concern about, you know, releasing the gas. But when we did those studies, the red line is the closed loop level of phosphine, and you can see after just about 20 hours we're up to 2,000 parts per million. On the conventional side, he really never got over 100 parts per million, and that's the way he's been doing it for years and years and years. And so we've now gone back, and he has, and this was, we let him treat this the way he normally would treat. Now we've gone back and done the same study where we cut the level of phosphine in the closed loop side by a, down to a quarter, and he's still getting the same kind of control. So by showing people that you can use the closed loop system, you can actually decrease the amount of phosphine that you're putting in there, thus saving money and still getting effective control, and you got to avoid this other system that has traditionally been done. And of course, with all of this, you got to monitor. And I like this quote that I saw at a China meeting that they said, if you're not monitoring, you're not fumigating. Because if you don't know what the level of your fumigant gas is in your structure, you don't know that you're getting any kind of control if you don't know what the level is. So in conclusion, discoveries and advances in knowledge must be translated for the public benefit. Otherwise, a lot of our research will just sit there in a research journal and only benefit other researchers and will not get to the end user. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.